Chief Judge Campbell Smith, Judge Vance, administering the oath. Administering the oath and delivering remarks is Judge Sarah Vance, who serves as Chief Judge for the District Court of the Eastern District of Louisiana, and who will be celebrating her 20th year on the bench next year. Holding the Lincoln Bible for the administration of the oath is Chief Judge Campbell Smith's 15-year-old daughter, Micah.
I, Patricia E. Campbell Smith.
I, Patricia E. Campbell Smith.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will administer justice without respect to persons.
That I will administer justice without respect to persons.
And do equal right to the poor and to the rich.
And do equal right to the poor and to the rich.
And that I will faithfully and impartially discharge.
And that I will faithfully and impartially discharge.
And perform all the duties incumbent upon me.
And perform all the duties incumbent upon me.
As judge of the Court of Federal Claims.
As judge of the Court of Federal Claims.
Under the Constitution and laws of the United States.
Under the Constitution and laws of the United States.
And that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States.
And that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same.
That I take this obligation freely.
That I take this obligation.
Without any mental reservation.
Without any mental reservation.
Or purpose of evasion.
Or purpose of evasion.
And that I will well and faithfully discharge.
And that I will well and faithfully discharge.
The duties of the office.
The duties of the office.
On which I am about to enter.
On which I am about to enter.
So help me God.
So.
Well, I cannot tell you all how thrilled and honored I am that Trish asked me to swear her in today as a judge on the United States Court of Federal Claims. Trish was my law clerk on the United States District Court for the Eastern District of Louisiana in 1996. And as all the judges here know, your law clerks become like your children, and they're definitely part of your family. So I have to say I'm totally over the top to see one of my own become a federal judge, and chief judge, no less, of such a prominent institution of the federal judiciary. But I can't say that I'm surprised. When Trish became my law clerk, she did not apply to me. No, I sought her out. She had clerked for Judge Marty Feldman on our court, and she had a successful law practice at the prominent law firm of Lisko & Lewis in New Orleans. She had graduated with honors from my alma mater, Tulane Law School, and had an engineering degree from Duke. The engineering degree got me more than the law school honors in the law practice, because I don't know how many young people you know can do the engineering thing and the law thing, but I know I couldn't. And that's when I knew that Trish was really, really smart. So after Marty Feldman said great things about Trish, and so did the partners at Lisko & Lewis, I took her to lunch at a nice downtown New Orleans restaurant and asked her if she could tear herself away from Lisko & Lewis to do another clerkship for a year with me. And I was so glad that she accepted my offer. Trish was a super law clerk. Not only was she an excellent writer and an analytical thinker, but she also had mature judgment and worked like a Trojan. And there was more. She was unflappable and carried herself with such confidence and grace that I knew she was going places. Underneath that gracious and feminine exterior, Trish was determined, tough as nails, and she had a lot of grit. She was bringing up Micah by herself and doing an excellent job at it, while she was excelling at every stage of her career. I think she might have brought Micah to a deposition or two, but hey, it all worked out. And Trish, today I got to meet your lovely mother, and I think I see where that strength of character comes from. Shortly after Trish finished her clerkship with me, she told me that she was going to move to D.C. and apply for another clerkship with Judge Emily Hewitt of this court. When Judge Hewitt called me about Trish, I couldn't say enough great things about her. And while Trish not only got the clerkship, but Judge Hewitt and the other members of this court obviously recognized her talents, because not too long thereafter, they appointed her as the special master and then as the chief federal master, special master, I'm sorry. So today, Trish is the first African-American chief judge of this court. It's a historic occasion. I know that she will be a wise, fair, diligent, and thoughtful judge. Trish, I am so proud of you and happy for you and your family and your friends on this important occasion. I have no doubt you will have a stellar judicial career. I look forward to seeing you at the annual meeting of federal chief judges here in D.C., which kind of blows my mind. But I want to thank you so much for allowing me to be part of your celebration today, and congratulations to you and all your family and your friends and to this court for the addition of such a fine jurist and such a great leader.
Thank you very much, Chief Judge Vance. Chief Judge Campbell-Smith, I offer you my heartfelt congratulations. Before I present to you Senior Judge Edward Damage, I draw your attention and thoughts to the court's third Chief Judge, Lawrence Baskier, who, although unable to be here today, is an integral part of the court's rich history. Judge Damage, who now will offer another historical note, served as the court's fourth chief judge.
Thank you, Hazel. It is an honor and a privilege to be asked to speak at the investiture of our new chief judge. I've known our new chief judge since she was knee-high to a grasshopper in a career sense at the court. That is to say, since she was a law clerk in Judge Hewitt's chambers back in 1998, when Judge Hewitt and I both joined the court. I had dark hair back then, and I was a little thinner. I'm pleased to see that our new chief, however, looks the same, has maintained her sense of style, retains her delightful personality, and more importantly, is just as kind and fair as she was then. It is characteristic of her grace that she wanted to make this occasion a celebration of the court, as well as her investiture in it. As most of you know, I was chief judge from 2002 to 2009. I was pleased to be involved in the sesquicentennial of our beloved court in 2005. It was in preparing for this commemoration that I came across an article that called the Court of Claims the People's Court. It struck me instantly how apt this name was, since the Court of Claims first got final decision-making power in 1866. A citizen of the United States has had the right to make a money claim against his or her government, and more important, has been able to employ this right without fear of retaliation. We may have become complacent about this great blessing, but a moment's reflection on the regimes of some other countries, even to this day, will remind us of how fortunate we are. But just as the People's Court is relevant to the plaintiffs who come before us, it is also relevant to the judges who sit on our bench. The people, when they come to our court, deserve justice that is complete. They deserve a judge whose docket is current, and they deserve a process that reflects cooperation among the parties, the attorneys, and the judge in the pursuit of truth. Those of you who are nostalgic may recognize incomplete, current, and cooperative, the three C's to which I pledged the court when I became chief. Happily, the court to this very day stands out among the federal judiciary for being current in its decision-making, and the cooperation between the court and the bar is exemplary. And this is due to the efforts of all of the judges and to former Chief Judge Hewitt, who succeeded me. To my surprise and delight, our new chief judge mentioned the three C's in a recent conversation with me. This gives me reason to believe that she appreciates those principles. My personal opinion, however, is that the complete justice prong still needs some work. That is, I believe that the court's jurisdiction is still too much of a patchwork. Instead, it needs to be a whole and seamless cloth. Speaking of cloth, why is it that we mark the beginning of a judge's tenure with a robing ceremony? From the research that I've done, it appears that the ceremony derives from the English tradition of investing an official with the regalia of her office. Those of you who remember the movie about Thomas More, A Man for All Seasons, may recall that upon being appointed chancellor, he received a golden chain that was traditionally worn by holders of that high office. Another example, bishops in the Catholic and Anglican churches are presented with mitre and crozier. But you may ask, why a black robe for judges? Again, my research has yielded that judges in olden times used to wear court dress, that is, dress suitable to be worn in the presence of the sovereign, and that this custom has evolved down to the black robe we have today. In 1635, the judge's rules contained for the first time the definitive guide for English judges' attire. In winter, a black robe faced with miniver, which is, by the way, a light-colored fur, and our new chief judge knew what that was when I said that. And in summer, violet or scarlet robes, and you ready for this? Faced with shot pink taffeta. I'm not making this up. A black cincture was worn with all robes. If only Chief Justice Rehnquist had known. There is evidence to confirm the legend dear to former Chief Judge Larry Basquiat. The judges switched to black all the time when they got used to it during the lengthy mourning period after the death in 1694 of Queen Mary II, as in William and Mary, but some historians dispute this. It is said that Thomas Jefferson wanted to abolish judicial robes entirely, but John Adams' insistence on them, minus the wig, won the day. There is a portrait of America's first Chief Justice, John Jay, wearing a silk robe of black and red. But I think there is more to the wearing of the judicial robe than an elitist tradition. Insofar as the robe masks the quotidian attire of a man or woman, it conveys to all that court is a special place and that arriving at a just outcome is serious business. It should also perhaps be a reminder to the judge that in covering up his or her individuality in dress, personal inclinations and predilections should be set aside so that objectivity may prevail. In these respects as well, seriousness and objectivity, Chief Judge Campbell Smith excels. It is my pleasure to be able to publicly welcome her as colleague and as chief. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Judge Damage. At this time, we will observe the robing of Chief Judge Campbell Smith. Her brothers, Marvin and Michael, will assist her. Chief Judge Campbell Smith, congratulations. And now the court's most senior judge, Marion Blankhorn, will invite Chief Judge Campbell Smith to join her colleagues on the bench.
It is an honor to welcome Chief Judge Patricia Campbell Smith to the bench with us. She brings so much experience to the court. I look forward personally and on behalf of the court to many energetic and smooth years under her leadership. As you can tell from the many years I have been here, this is a wonderful job with exciting intellectual challenges that change each and every day and with each case. I truly hope you enjoy this job as much as I do. On behalf of my colleagues on the court, welcome and congratulations. Please come up and take your rightful place in the center amongst us.
Judge Horn, for the welcome to join my colleagues on the bench as I offer a few remarks of my own. I am pleased today to have the company of the prior chief judges of the court, as well as the company of two of the judges who have contributed to my personal appreciation for certain quintessential characteristics in a federal judge. As I have sorted through the thoughts I desire to make today, I recognize that I would be remiss not to mention two other judges for whom I also worked, Judge John Minor Wisdom of the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, and his first law clerk, Judge Martin Feldman of the District Court of the Eastern District of Louisiana, located in New Orleans. What a privilege to have worked closely with each of these remarkable jurists who have exemplified a personal commitment to preparedness, fairness, integrity, and justice that parlayed seamlessly into their work as judges. I am grateful for their invaluable mentorship as I have developed and honed my own legal skills. As I am formally invested as a judge on this court today, I am reminded that my personal investment in the judiciary began much earlier. I recall standing in chambers one evening in New Orleans in 1992, looking out of the window of the federal courthouse in the direction of the French Quarter, and thinking that I was enjoying the best legal job I could imagine, other than sitting as a judge. I determined that I would make the most of my experience in chambers over the next 9 months. That experience and my subsequent ones did not disappoint, as I poured myself into each presented opportunity. Applying myself fully to each effort I undertake is consistent with who I am and who I have been required to be by my parents. My parents instructed my two brothers and me that we were to do whatever we chose to do exceptionally well and with impeccable character. Long before the bar of any court inquired into whether I was a person of good moral character, my parents had insisted upon such, in accordance with the providential exhortation to do justly, love mercy, and walk humbly with Him. I am committed to do so, and I am thankful for the confidence that President Obama has placed in me with this appointment as a judge on this court, and the trust he has exhibited by designating me as chief judge of this court, which, as articulated by President Abraham Lincoln, shall provide a forum in which the government can render prompt justice against itself in favor of citizens, as other judicial fora allow prompt justice to be rendered between private citizens. Mindful of this court's particular role, I am honored and profoundly humbled by today's formal investiture, and I wholeheartedly embrace this opportunity to serve. I am out of order. And that's okay. I'm going to defer to the other portion of the program, and then I have a little bit more that I'd like to add before we adjourn.
Of course, Chief.
Thank you.
At this time, an additional and final historical note and remarks will be shared by the court's fifth and immediate past Chief Judge Emily C. Hewitt.
Thank you. This is short, and because of the extraordinary achievements that we all want to mention of the our new Chief Judge, it will be highly repetitive. Thank you, Chief, for the opportunity to speak at this, your investiture. 15 years, almost to the day after we first started work together here at the court. The opportunity to have Chief Judge Campbell Smith as a colleague was a stroke of luck. In connection with her relocation to Baltimore from New Orleans to be close to her family, she applied by mail for a position with each of the six judges newly appointed to the court in October of 1998. I was the first to open the letter. And I called her immediately, dialing the number with the letter opener still in my hand. We met the next day. When I walked her back to the car after we spoke, I met two members of her immediate family, her mother, Mrs. Campbell, and her daughter, Micah, and it is wonderful that they, with the Chief's brothers, are here today, and aunt, are here today to celebrate the newest chapter in the Chief's career. As you know, the Chief has an impressive biography. I'm going to start with one the other people didn't get. She graduated first in her class from a highly competitive Maryland College Preparatory School. A couple others. After considering college scholarship offers from, among other institutions, Harvard College, she accepted the scholarship that's been mentioned at Duke University, and the degree she received was in electrical engineering, as you've heard. What you haven't heard is that she was elected to Dean's List and also elected to, you may not have heard of this, Eta Kappa Nu, which is the National Electrical Engineering Honorary Society. While at Duke, she also pursued coursework in comparative economics at Oxford University. The Chief did become an engineer in the petroleum industry in Louisiana, and after a tour of duty as an engineer in the Louisiana oil fields, 2 years of that being long enough, as I understand it, she turned to law. She received her Doctor of Law degree, as you've heard, with honors from Tulane, and then had distinguished clerkships with two judges, Judges Feldman and Vance from the district court, and an internship with Judge John Minor Wisdom. Meanwhile, Lisko and Lewis, as a senior partner told me, was looking forward to elevating Chief Judge Campbell Smith to partnership. However, the Chief Judge concluded that she should move her family back to Baltimore, and the Chief accepted a clerkship in my chambers where she mentored more than 20 clerks and interns, and that was in addition to mentoring with great tact and skill, emphasis on tact, me as a newly appointed judge. Then in 2005, she was selected by the court to serve as a special master in the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program. Not long after the appointment of the chief as a special master, the vaccine program received filings in hundreds and ultimately thousands of cases seeking to determine whether the growing epidemic of the childhood disease of autism was a result of the administration of childhood vaccines. Then Special Master Campbell Smith, with her special master colleagues, George Hastings and Denise Fowl, heard evidence in representative cases and in hundreds of pages of opinions subsequently scrutinized and affirmed in multiple appeals, determined that the scientific evidence did not support the causation claimed. In April of 2011, the court selected then Special Master Campbell Smith to serve as Chief Special Master of the Vaccine Program, and in that capacity, she has earned a reputation for fairness and efficiency that has already been recognized here. Not only has she managed the challenging docket of that program to achieve the promptest results practicable, but she has also been an innovator in continuing legal education for the bar of the vaccine program. The vaccine bar, like the bar of this court's general jurisdiction, is a national bar. And for the first time earlier this year, the Federal Judicial Center, the educational arm of the federal courts, sponsored, under the leadership of then Chief Special Master Campbell Smith, a live vaccine bar educational program incorporating in real time the participation of expert lecturers from around the United States. Using electronic resources, the program modeled face-to-face live judicial education for our time of tight budgets and limited travel funds. To summarize, the court has a star in our chief judge. Congratulations to the chief judge, and three cheers for the good fortune of the court.
Thank you, Judge Hewitt. Chief Judge Campbell Smith, I imagine you have a few more words to say.
Thank you. Before we adjourn, I would like to extend my heartfelt gratitude to my family and friends who have traveled great distances today. Not only today, but again and again, in their faithful love and support of me and my daughter, Micah. I speak particularly to my dad and my grandmother, who are absent today, but very much remembered. To my AP biology classmates, who were also my classmates in the flight training class of our beloved Miss Porter, a World War II pilot. I'm glad you're here. To my electrical engineering study partner, who tolerated my popcorn consumption as she devoured cereal. I'm glad you're here. To my many college and law school friends, who were as fervent about our study as about our play, I'm glad you're here. To my Exxon friends, who inspired me daily to track the movement of the incoming crude to ensure that we returned home safely each evening, I'm glad you're here. To my many friends who have provided material support to me in my other work as a mother, I am very glad you're here. To my court friends, and anyone here today, but not identified previously, who have prayed with or for me, who have shared tissues with me, but to be clear, not actually the same tissues, who have laughed uproariously when life's various difficult or poignant events have inserted themselves along the way, I thank you for the role you have played in ensuring that I remain authentically who I am and who I desire to be, and who I will bring to bear at the court. To my colleagues, the bar, and friends of the court who have welcomed me so warmly in the past few weeks, I thank you. I am very much looking forward to setting about the work of the Court of Federal Claims, upholding its rich traditions and furthering the important mission of the court, which, consistent with the First Amendment of the Constitution of the United States, recognizes and respects the right of the people to petition the government for a redress of their grievances. As we draw to a close, I invite you to join me next for a reception in the Dolly Madison House. As you exit the courtroom, turn right and proceed down the hallway to the end. Turn left and proceed past the fireplace and go left down the stairs. There will be people to help. At the base of the stairs, you will find yourself in the Dolly Madison House. The reception will be in the main parlor. Ushers standing outside of the courtroom and at key points will direct you to the reception area. Please remember to bring with you to the Dolly Madison any coats or other outerwear that you may have brought. A coat room and coat racks will be available for your use. There being no further business, this special session of the court is adjourned.
Very nice. Good job for reading that.